astrology is based on real things, and it starts with the stars, and they are real things that are emitting real electromagnetic forces. And we live in the middle of this field of star force. That same old comment that there's as many stars in the sky as there are grains of sand on the earth. Now, if you imagine that, then you've got all these beams of force that have been constant for billions of years. And so they create this sort of holographic energetic field. And within that, we've got the solar system moving. And so we've got this, again, like an atom, we've got the sun in the middle, and then we've got these sort of energetic magnetic spheres that in the atom would have the electrons organized, whereas in the solar system we have planets. And those planets are sitting there spinning and condensing matter that's come from the sun. But as they move around inside that magnetic shell, they change the form of that shell. And so the star forces that are coming through those planetary shells are hitting a different tone. So it's like the difference between C sharp and C minor. As, let's say, Mercury moves around its shell, it warps that shell, and so the tone coming from that star force is altered as it comes through there. And that's what we receive. We receive that electromagnetic variance on the Earth here. And so as the planets move, they alter the magnetism within our solar system, and matter follows magnetism. So as the magnetism changes, so does the matter change. So there's a direct relationship between the movements of the planets and the effect on Earth.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth. On the phone from Havelock North, down in the middle of North Island, I have Glenn Atkinson. And Glenn was with me just 2 weeks ago when we discussed his new understanding of the periodic table of elements, where it's written down in a two-dimensional flat form that you sit on the table. But what he's done, he's lifted it off the table and put it into a round circle, or more so a sphere, and this has shifted the whole game and understanding. This is paradigm shifting. And so I just want to say kia ora, Glenn, and thank you again for coming on board.
Hi, yep, and well, thank you for the opportunity.
Glenn, could you just quickly mention how this new periodic table works? Just quickly let people realise it's a three-dimensional form, not a two-dimensional flat surface.
Yeah. Well, when we look at atoms, for example, they're a sphere. They're an energetic sphere. And so you've got the nucleus there with protons and neutrons, and then there's these sort of rings of electrons that are around it, but it's as a sphere. And so Mendeleev, when they drew the two-dimensional form, they got quite a lot of the story there, the different layers of the rings of electrons and so on. But when we're learning chemistry, we have to keep making this mental adjustment between this two-dimensional diagram back into something that is like the reality of an atom. Now, there's still a lot of conversation around that, and people talk now about electron clouds rather than these specific rings with the electrons in their specific relationship and so on. But that aside, the point is we're always making that jump from this flat two-dimensional image to this three-dimensional spherical form. And I've personally found that quite difficult. And so out of that came the image of, well, why don't we look at it as a circle? And then, of course, it has to be developed back into this spherical form. But just as a circle is a really good starting place. And what happens when you do that is that you start to see these different relationships between the elements. For example, elements can be opposite to each other, and at 90 degrees to each other, and so on. And so it starts to just show a lot of different relationships. Of course, we observe them already, but there's no sort of direct sort of rational link on the two-dimensional page. So we just acknowledge the interaction and relationship and move forwards. But a lot of those relationships become very clear once it's on a circle.
Very much so, to the degree that I maintain, Glenn, that we're going to have physicists and Nobel Prize winners and chemists say, why didn't I think of that? Because this is what's going to happen.
Well, it's all fairly simple observations. The whole process that I've been through is just looking and observing and making simple observations. And one of them is that there's three groups of elements in the periodic table. There's the major elements and then the transition elements and then the rare earth elements at the bottom, in those two lines at the bottom. And of course, people tend to see them as one thing, one lot of group. But in fact, those three groups, there's eight major elements, 10 transition elements, and 14 rare earth families. And so that's like in music, it's like the fourth, the fifth, and the seventh note. So that when you've got fourth, the fourth in the octave is a tension, and the fifth tends to be a more harmonic note, as is the seventh. So each of these groups then can be seen as an individual organisation. And so within that organisation, we can put that onto a circle. And just as we have the new moon moving through to full moon, back to new moon again, we can see that same expansion and contraction process through each of these groups of elements. And so we start to bring up more the quality and the character of each of these elements just by looking at that. And of course, once you've got them as a circle, you've got three circles sitting there, you can put them on top of each other. And so that then reveals a whole lot of interactive relationships, again, that aren't obvious in the two-dimensional plane. So these are very simple observations and simple sort of artistic steps, you might say. But the information it's revealing is really high quality, good, usable information, you know.
This is, yes, as I said, this is a new paradigm. This is going to shift the whole game plan, which is fantastic. However, we're going to have another crack at shifting the game plan today, Glenn, and that is astrology is a fact of physics. And all around us, we have planets and constellations, and the sun's the centre of a system. Can you lead us into this, please?
Yes, well, it's very common that astrology is always presented as some kind of sort of witchcraft belief and got to believe in it. And that's not true at all. The thing is that astrology is based on real things, and it starts with the stars, and they are real things that are emitting real electromagnetic forces. And we live in the middle of this field of star force. That same old comment that there's as many stars in the sky as there are grains of sand on the earth. Now, if you imagine that, then you've got all these beams of force that have been constant for billions of years. And so they create this sort of holographic energetic field. And within that, we've got the solar system moving. And so we've got this, again, like an atom, we've got the sun in the middle, and then we've got these sort of energetic magnetic spheres that in the atom would have the electrons organized, whereas in the solar system we have planets. And those planets are sitting there spinning and condensing matter that's come from the sun. But as they move around inside that magnetic shell, they change the form of that shell. And so the star forces that are coming through those planetary shells are hitting a different tone. So it's like the difference between C sharp and C minor. As, let's say, Mercury moves around its shell, it warps that shell, and so the tone coming from that star force is altered as it comes through there. And that's what we receive. We receive that electromagnetic variance on the Earth here. And so as the planets move, they alter their magnetism within our solar system, and matter follows magnetism. So as the magnetism changes, so does the matter change. So there's a direct relationship between the movements of the planets and the effect on Earth. Now, within the biodynamic agricultural movement, there's a few people have done this work, but there's a particular book called Moon and Plant by a woman, Agnes Fife. And they were doing a method called chromatography, where they get the sap of a plant and they rise it up through blotting paper, and then they rise up silver nitrate, and then they expose that to the light, and it develops a picture. And it's showing us the sort of qualities of the sap of the plant at the time that it was picked. And so she did these trials over quite a few years, like every so many hours. And so what she found was a direct relationship between the movements of the planets and the change in the plant sap. And so she showed this direct correlation that plants are completely affected by movements of the planets. Now, of course, astrology has been doing this for 5,000 years, and we've been watching that direct relationship. And I myself has been doing it for 40 years. And so there's this tremendous body of knowledge around what is the influence of the various planets when they're in certain places and in certain relationships with other planets. And so there is a very worked up science of these effects. Now, as I say, there's no belief here. This is a direct relationship between the state of the field of the solar system and what's happening on Earth. There is no belief here, you know.
Well, can I just jump in here? Because the global elite who control the worldwide media use the media to put down astrology at every turn. However, are quite happy for newspapers to have these little cheap daily horoscope columns, which are generalised stuff, which are basically hit and miss. And some even just rehash old statements from previous years and put them in there just to basically fill the article. Yet, behind our back, the elite will always draw up a chart for their children or their babies, and the elders will always check their chart or their country's chart before going to war or making a large incursion into the market or change of government, etc. This is a fact, is it not?
Well, as far as I understand it, like Ronald Reagan was busted back in the 80s there when Nancy was using an astrologer. And I've been watching American foreign policy ever since. And basically, if there is tension in the sky, they will not react to any kind of stimulus. So they can actually be attacked, they can be bombed, and you'll see they won't do anything until the planets are actually in a very positive relationship, and then they'll act. And of course, when planets are in a positive relationship, all the people relax. They think life is good, and so they don't actually react to this abuse of power that will be taking place in front of them. Whereas when there's tension, they would feel that tension, and so they would respond. And so, yes, I totally believe that all the governments are using astrology. And, of course, this is why they don't want the people to use astrology. This is why they have to put down astrology. Now, as I've said, astrology is a fact of physics, and it's scientifically true. And so here we have a society that wants to base itself upon scientific fact, but then they deny the very basic fact of magnetism and matter. So this is an immense hypocrisy that these people are perpetrating on the people, where they use it, they know it works, it is a fact of physics, and then they come along and try and fool people into believing that it's all fantasy.
That's right.
It's fraud. It's a huge fraud that they're perpetrating.
Correct. I mean, this woman whom Nancy Reagan brought in was Joan Quigley. And evidently, she went as far as she said that over the next 7 years, she issued guidance for pay that went far beyond mundane scheduling to matters of diplomacy, Cold War politics, and even the timing of the president's cancer surgery. And we must agree that Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev were able to actually close down the Cold War, pull down the wall. So obviously, she was working with something to make it a more peaceful world for us.
Well, I think most astrologers that I've met are always very well-intentioned people, because we're trying to bring consciousness into a very unconscious realm. Once you look at your own birth chart and start looking at what it's saying and where it is sort of hitting you in your feeling life, it's incredibly unconscious stuff. And so for us to be able to bring that unconsciousness into a conscious state is a real benefit, an evolutionary step in a way. And I'd like to say, to me, the greatest next step of human development will be when everybody starts to use astrology. And of course, now with astrology.com, all of the information is freely available to anybody with a computer. And you can get free astrology programs for $60. You get a really good astrology program. And so all of this information is freely available to anybody. And it's a very simple language that is based upon the nine planets and the sun. So we have the solar system with the sun and nine planets. The moon is classed as one of the planets. And so we have the solar system with the sun in the middle and the nine planets in the rings of the magnetic field, which is very similar to an atom where we have the nucleus and the rings of the electron. And so it's as above, so below, macrocosm, microcosm pattern that we're seeing. And so there's only 10 players in the whole game. And the planets rule the signs of the zodiac. So you don't even have to be too specific about learning about the signs of the zodiac, because the planets' information will tell you what those signs are. And so all we've got to learn is the 10, you know, the sun and nine planets. And of course, most people have these images out of the Greek mythology that they have as a child, or the Roman mythology, or any mythology will tell you about who these characters are. So when I say Venus, most people will have some sort of reference that it's the goddess of love, you know, and Mars is the god of war. Now, all we're doing is we're saying Venus and Mars either have a positive or a negative relationship. So what happens when the goddess of love and the god of war are positive? They're obviously going to be having a very passionate and intensely wonderful relationship.
Yes.
And when they're negative, they're not going to. So they're going to not be on the same page, let's say, when it comes to social circumstance, even desire. Their desires don't match. So it's really a simple language that we can use, and it's freely available. And so it's like, if humanity gets onto this, then not only will they be able to look at their own unconsciousness and bring that to consciousness, but then by looking at where the planets are in the sky now and in the future, you can see how those unconscious states are going to be set off and brought to the fore. And you can see how long they're going to be there. So if we're looking at a depressed person, for example, there's a high probability that we can see whether they're sort of, how would you put it, depressed at birth and or not. And then we can see when that's going to be set off. And so we can say, okay, in January of next year, you're going to have one of these events, and then it'll come back in July, and then it'll come back in November. And that's the period of time. So instead of these people feeling like they're trapped in a black hole for the rest of their lives, they actually have an end date to the event. And so it's a great relief. But of course, on top of that, we're bringing this to objective consciousness. We're saying your depression is not related to you so much. It's related to the way the planets are affecting you. And so comes this whole experience of what is subjective reality and what is objective reality. And spiritual awakening and spiritual enlightenment, they're not doing terms, they're waking up terms. So there's nowhere to go, there's nowhere to travel for enlightenment. All you've got to do is wake up to the fact that your self, your spirit, can be objective to this unconscious story that's being driven by the planets. And with that comes quite a degree of freedom. It's a very powerful thing. And if humanity at large gets onto this, it'll be tremendous.
Yes, I can hear you. There's this thing called transits, and a lot of people will want to maybe get an understanding of of how these planets all move, because all things must pass, so to speak.
Yeah.
And we go through these particular times where we have so-called blocks, and then all of a sudden things start to flow and we have synchronicity or serendipity, particularly if we're in our heart and we've got a clear head or clear mind. So could you carry on expanding on it, please, Glenn?
Okay. So transits is a word for the planets moving. You know, transit is movement. And so the way it works is that we've got our birth chart. So this is where we are at birth. And what I mean by that is that it certainly helps to have some appreciation of reincarnation so that it's not just the bad luck. You know, your personality, your birth chart isn't just a bad lottery draw. It's actually the result of all of your past lives. Now, that's endless. You could make that a million past lives, or you could make it two or three, whatever you like. But the point being that us, the spirit, is this eternal being that moves from one life to the next. And every experience we have, it's like we put a T-shirt on. You know, we've been there, done that. And so we wind all of this experience into our and around our eternal spirit, and that becomes our sort of personality and our psychology and all of our neuroses, and all of that is all wound up in what we call the astral body, because that's what astrology is. It's the theology of the astral body, and this is related to the planets. The stars are the spirit realm, and the planets are what we call the astral realm. And so all of our experiences from the past are accumulated, and that's what's imaged in the birth chart. Now, from birth, we have the ability to alter that field of activity, that astral body, and it's through our will. Where we've got a habit we don't like, our will says, I'm going to change this. I'm going to physically force my physical body into doing something else. And in forcing the physical body, the energetic body has to shift. The matter sort of alters the magnetism, as it were, rather than the other way around. And so by doing that 10,000 times, we form a new habit. So we've forced our astral body into a change. And so that's the point of life. This is the place we have this opportunity to reorganize this energetic psychology that we have. And so the birth chart's just the starting place, and we develop, and there's a system we can talk about called progression, which tracks that change that we go through during our lives. However, based upon our birth chart, that energy is always active within us, and the planets in the sky now, they move, and they're all predictable. Luckily, the planets in the sky are predictable. And so as those planets in the sky move, they shine back to the positions where our planets were at birth. And so it sets them off. And so if we've got a planet like Pluto in the sky that at the moment is at 24 degrees Capricorn, and it runs over our birth sun, for example, it's going to take 3 years generally to get over there, because the Earth is moving around the Sun faster than what Pluto does. So as we sort of come behind Pluto, Pluto looks like it's going forwards, and then we come up and we meet Pluto, and then as we move in front of it, it appears to be going backwards. And so as the Earth goes around the Sun, these outer planets, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, they go forwards, then they go backwards, and then they go forwards again. And so what that means is that when it's coming over your sun, it has these three passes. And so Pluto is a planet of empowerment. It just wants to empower you to be more of who you are. But of course, in that process of empowerment, you're going to come across all these people who don't want you to be empowered. And that can be for many reasons, and one of them might be that they are completely psychopathic individuals and they want to keep you as their prisoner. And so as you're being empowered into your own strength, you're going to be having to deal with these other abusive power people to find your own power. And so in that 3-year period that it takes for Pluto to go over your sun, you will have these different stages that you'll be dealing with that process. Now, you may not actually fulfill that time, that transit. So you might have to wait for the next one, which will be a different degree. But the point is, it will give you another opportunity to deal with these powerful people in your life. And so through your life, you get these several opportunities to go through the same process and ultimately be a fully empowered individual. And so all the planets do this. They all have their different cycles. Some are faster than the others, but they generally run over something which will bring the situation to the fore. They then go backwards over it, which consolidates the process so that you can be really clear what the issue is. And then it comes over for a third time, and it's most usual that in that third pass, the situation will come to a head and it will have its conclusion for that period. And so these are all highly predictable, and you can watch them. Not only can you see them in the future coming, and so you can imagine what might be going on, but while the event is taking place, you can be sitting there looking at the events in your life as they're appearing to you and write them down in a notepad and say, well, this is what's coming up in my life. And then when it comes back for the second time, you can tick them off and go, okay, they come back again. And so you now have a period of about 4 or 5 months to do something before the outcome takes place. And so it sort of gives you quite a bit of freedom to respond to situations. Now, Saturn, for example, in your birth chart, when Pluto goes over Saturn in your birth chart, that's breaking of old physical forms. And this can be a death aspect. It can also be a bankruptcy aspect. And so if, for example, your business is coming under stress in that first pass, and then it continues to come under stress in the second pass, it's saying, okay, here comes bankruptcy, mate. You've got 4 or 5 months now to act in a manner that can minimize that outcome. So first of all, you're facing the fact that this is a real thing. And second, you might be able to put your house into a trust. You might be able to go and borrow more money. It takes a few months, set up an overdraft facility. So it gives you freedom to respond to these situations that are coming at you, you know. So anyway, go on.
Yeah. So what you're saying is this maps where we can go, and we've got this, all these astrology programs to allow us to see exactly what's going on. I mean, this is mind-blowing. 2,000 years ago, 100 years ago even, we couldn't do this. This is just fantastic if one wants to map out where they're going.
So we as the base population couldn't do this, but of course the kings, you know, aristocracy has been doing this for thousands of years. Babylonia was doing this 3000 BC. So the practice of astrology has been around for an incredibly long period of time. And it was around about 1600 that our European culture started to, it escaped the courts, let's put it. And so, you know, Nostradamus in 1500 something was sitting there doing work for other people other than the royalty. So it was from that time in 1500 that it started to become available. That was when the first astronomical tables and things were becoming available to people. But it's really since the 90s and computers. I think I got my first computer in 1986 or 87. And so from that point on, the ability to get the information is just massive. And to do a birth chart now, it takes less than a minute to get all the information on a birth chart. And then with another sort of 2 clicks of a button, and you've got what the planets are doing to that birth chart on a graph. And that can be for any number of years. For the next 20 years, you can just see this picture of the main points of when things are going to happen. This is all within minutes that we can do this. But, of course, we can do so much more. Astrology is really just a series of little games. You know, there's lots of little games that you play. And people have been doing this for so long that there's 1,000 different games you can play. And every astrologer has their own pet little games that they use to find information. And you accumulate as many as you can fit in your bag, really. And that will just keep providing good information easily.
Well, can I go back a little bit to our first breath? And this is where somebody is born, and at that particular moment, click, you actually capture all the different planets and where the sun is and the moon is, and you see all these different configurations, these geometric configurations. That's the first thing, isn't it? Even if you have a caesarean birth.
A caesarean. Well, the story is, as I said, I took it back to the previous life, that the energetic activity of when you die, it doesn't actually change between your death and your rebirth. That's what I was saying. The only place you can change that energetic structure is during life. And so when you die, the characteristics that you have at that point are going to be reviewed. You know, between death and rebirth, you can review those traits and the effect you've had on other people and all that sort of thing. And so you build your own next life before you take birth. And so the birth point is really chosen to best mirror the existing state of your energetic body. And so it's not so much that there's some magical sort of stamp put on your head at the time of birth, as you've already got that energy. And so you choose the time of birth that is most appropriate for your existing energy. And where you have caesareans and these things, it's very interesting because quite often those people do feel a slight disalignment within themselves. And I haven't tracked that a lot because it's a bit hard to work out the exact time they should have been born. But when you talk to these people, they do have that sort of slight disconnection experience. But the people who are born naturally, well, they've already chosen that time, just as they've chosen the people and the parents and the events in their lives. And so the transits that we are talking about, we already set that up for ourselves. We've already set this sort of planetary train in motion. And all we're doing is we're just playing out the script and the opportunities that we've set up for ourselves. And that then becomes the game. Are you going to let those experiences push you around, or are you going to go into those experiences with some consciousness about what can be achieved in that experience and make it as a positive spiral rather than either nothing or a negative outcome? And so if you've got an issue in your birth chart that's talks about persecution, are you going to be a victim of that persecution, or are you going to stand as an individual and not accept that persecution? That's the sort of choice that you can make, you know.
Yes, well, you see, you've entered into realms here that a lot of people may not have much to do with in the situation of previous lifetimes and future lifetimes. This is one thing. And as you say, also for karma coming through, reaping what you have sown in a previous life or doing something now that you may reap further on into your future. And so, yeah, it's a big one, Glenn, what you're talking about. We choose our parents. A lot of people don't understand that. And I just want to jump in there to sort of allow my listeners a little understanding. I remember about, 30 years ago, I was approaching the Auckland Harbour Bridge and I was with this person in a car, and I had this flash that he and I were Roman centurions in the Roman army. We were foot soldiers. And that's all I got. But the strange thing was he died the next week in an aeroplane crash. And maybe I was being shown something. But the other thing is that I want to talk about choosing your parents. Can you... I'm speaking with Glenn Atkinson, and his website is GarudaBD.org. GarudaBD.org. And he's explaining to us that astrology is scientific and it is physics at its core. And he's covering a wide panorama for us today that can extend our cosmology hugely and that which is unknown. Choosing your parents, can you...
Yeah, beforehand, I'll just comment that, you know, our particular society, the Caucasian Western society, Christian, don't actually have an appropriate worldview for viewing reality correctly, is how I'd put it.
Good.
And through the sort of rewriting of the Bible and the Council of Nicaea and all these things, instead of being a fourfold being like the Hindus understand us to be, which is a spirit that comes from the stars and the astral comes from the planets and the etheric from the atmosphere of the earth and the physical from the physical earth, instead of having that sort of construct, Christianity has broken it down to having a physical body and a soul. And then they put sort of God the Father out there and they put the priesthood in between and they tie us up with all sorts of eternal sin and things like this. But in many streams of our culture, that soul has been reduced to the mind as we turn into materialists. The soul becomes the mind, and so we just have a body and a mind, and the mind is actually all delusion, so we take drugs to get rid of the mind, and so we're just the body. And so all of these concepts of reincarnation and individual freedom and all this sort of stuff, there's no construct for actually understanding these things. But when we look at the rest of the world, then the Hindus, for example, 1.1 billion of them, they get it. They have astrology all through their whole society. The Chinese, another billion, they've got astrology all through their society. The Islamic society, I'm not exactly sure where they are. They used to have it all through their society. And so there is a large section of humanity who do get this about astrology and how to use it and its place and so forth. And it's really our culture and our cultural framework that is stopping us from really getting it, how it all works. Now, getting on to your question about parents and so on, we're energetically linked to all these people. And so from my investigations, most people don't evolve away from their family group. That family group sort of stays together and moves through time. And so the grandmother becomes the granddaughter and the grandfather becomes the son and this sort of thing. And so we're sort of energetically linked to all these people. And so we've got all these karmic issues with them. So we're going to keep reincarnating with them. That experience that you describe is really an important one because that's what we get. So we keep getting all these little flashes of these relationships and with these people. And of course our culture, the mind is delusion, says that they're just fantasy. You're just having a wild vision and you don't take it seriously. But you took that seriously about that guy, you know. And it's all those little flashes of insights that tells us about our past lives because they're wound into our energetic body and so they're going to keep surfacing. And the sort of, let's call it past life research I've done, is really this process of just sitting with those visions and allowing them to surface. And you have the question, what is my relationship with this person? And just by having that question, these sort of visions and impressions start to surface. And so you can build up a picture of this. But it's in the birth charts, by the way, that if you, for getting back to the persecution sort of thing, in relationship charts, quite often you'll find that somebody may have a persecution tendency and the person they get in relationship with has a sort of persecutor tendency. And those planets are actually sitting right on top of each other. And so that's indicating that these people have been playing this game out for some time and that this life is actually to redeem that, for the persecuted to realise that they are the persecutor, for the victim to realise they are the victim, and for them to come to some sort of clear consciousness about this. And in that bringing to consciousness, it's like it breaks the spell, so they don't have to keep doing this. They don't have to keep playing out the persecutor victim. But of course, in our early life, we tend to. The early relationships in our life, I believe, are quite often the more negative, unconscious ones. And after 35 or so, we tend to draw the positive relationships, you know. That's been my experience, let's put it that way.
Well, in the case of, say, partnerships, very often I've noticed with many of my friends, you may have an earth sign who will be married to a water sign, or an air sign married to a fire sign, or combinations of fire and fire, or earth and earth, etc. And I think that if we actually got the birth register and just saw who was married to who, and then saw their birth date, we would find a huge percentage of these people would actually show that they are connected via an earth of a water or an air with a fire sign.
Yep, they're certainly the relationships that go together easily. You can appreciate that a water and a fire sign don't necessarily get on. It creates a lot of steam.
Yeah.
The sort of spontaneity of the fire sign with the lethargy of the water sign don't sort of fit together too well, you know. So there are all those things, but once you start looking at the planet, it's really quite a fascinating process where you look at, say, the people's Mercury. And if my Mercury and your Mercury are in some 90 degree angle, then we're going to have difficulty listening to each other. We actually can't hear each other. And same with Venus. If our Venus is a tense, then we don't like the same people, we don't like the same social situations. The way I act in a social situation will make your skin cringe. And so the good relationships are when all of these inner planets are all actually friendly with one another, and at that point you actually like the other person. You can hear them, you like their friends, you like the way they're communicating with the other person. If Mars is a happy, then you're able to work together and achieve things together, and sexually things are better when Mars and Venus are happy. So it's a really important thing to get all that happy. And then relationships, of course, become easy. And which I personally believe is what you have to have. Relationships have to be easy because life's hard enough.
Particularly at this moment. Now, Glenn, Mercury is the closest planet to the Sun, and it is the planet of communication. And the next planet out is Venus, which is the planet of love. So when that light and energy comes from the Sun, it passes by Mercury, and then Venus is the next one, which is love. So we on Earth, in many cases, should be embedded in more love. But what I'm asking, the question I want to ask is, when Mercury is in retrograde, more communications seem more garbled, or more agreements seem more garbled, but as soon as Mercury goes direct, there is more flow and more ease. This is common, isn't it?
Yes, most definitely. So Mercury, okay, we've only got 9 planets and the Sun, and so we've got everything in our experience is governed by one of these 9 planets. So these planets tend to influence fairly wide number of things. And so Mercury, yes, governs communication. So it's our communication that we're doing now. We're talking over a telephone and we're sharing opinions and ideas, and it's my opinion. It's not something I've learnt or something I've got from an education institute. This is my opinion that I'm sharing. And so this is Mercury, but it governs all of the devices of communication. So fax machines, phones, but also short distance travel. And so it's, you know, us communicating with our neighbours and gossip and being able to drive into town and see our friend over there. So it also governs transport and vehicles. And you'll find during this Mercury retrograde, the vehicles will break down. Communication breaks down. It's classically not a time to make a contract. You can negotiate the contract, but don't finish the contract. It's also quite often best not to buy things during a Mercury retrograde, because they tend to break down. Something will be wrong with it, or even when you buy it, something will be wrong with it, or within a very short period of time, it'll break down. So yes, but all the retrogrades do this. So with Venus, you're saying it's the planet of love, it's the planet of relationships and friendships, and so during a Venus retrograde, you're going to have difficulty in relationships. Things may not go so clearly. Your partner, who you usually get on with, may have all sorts of misunderstandings with. So each of the planets does sort of go against itself, as it were, during a retrograde period. But Mercury retrograde is very common now. People are watching it and giving it understanding, because it really does show up. Vehicles don't work, transportation messes up. It's very, very observable.
Now, another one, constellations. How do constellations come into it?
Okay, constellations are stars. So we've got our individual star, the Sun. That's our star, what I call that, the world spirit, because that's the spirit that is organizing our world. But then we've got all these other stars out beyond our solar system and even beyond our galaxy, and that's the cosmic realm. So that is a sort of cosmic spirit activity that's working onto us. And so those constellations are there. They're real. Every star is an atomic reactor putting out immense amounts of force, and that force is coming to us. And so there's a classic statement by Paracelsus and Goethe and Steiner that every species on Earth finds its source in a star. And so what that's indicating is that that star force that's been beaming at us for 10 billion years is setting up a standing wave of force that is here in our hologram, and that leads to the accumulation of activity which leads to a species. And so that's like a rose being a rose, and it just keeps being a rose. Now, the variations on the species are coming as the star force is coming through the planetary sphere. And so we have Saturn roses, and we have Jupiter roses, and Mars roses, and Venus roses, and Mercury roses. And Mercury governs climbing plants. And so your climbing roses are governed by Mercury. Your floribundas are governed by Venus, for example. And Saturn tends to be bigger tree-like things, which might be those incredibly thorny roses would tend to be governed by Saturn more. And so the point is, the stars set up the sort of species structure that we're finding on Earth. Now, there's this other point that there's a difference between the constellations that are real things out there and the signs of the zodiac. They're two very, very different things. And so the signs of the zodiac are actually a 12-fold division of the sun's path. So the constellations are the stars that sit behind the sun's path, okay? So when we're talking about the signs of the zodiac, we're coming to our solar system. We're coming in. We've travelled a long way in. And so we're now talking about our world spirit rather than the cosmic spirit. And we're saying we're going to divide that into 12 equal parts. And we're going to begin that at the spring equinox of the northern hemisphere. So we're really bringing this thing to the Earth. And so the energy, let's say, of the constellations is being put into a much more earthly context. So we're bringing it down to Earth. And this is related more to the psychology of humans. The signs of the zodiac tell us about the psychology of humans, whereas the constellation, they are this much more general cosmic activity that is helping to bring form into things. So they're quite different, if that makes sense.
Yes, well, I mean, it's big when you have a look at the 12 constellations and you see certain characteristics, etc., there as well. Now, can I ask, I want to just throw this in, because over years I've noticed there that the Bible has changed a lot. I've got a friend of St. James Bible, early St. James Bible, and he gets out this piece that says, from the east came the astrologers, and then subsequent printings, they changed it, they became magi. And then after the Magi, they turned into the three wise men.
Mm.
And we're watering it down to the degree now it's the three Coca-Cola salesmen.
Well, that's right. Now, what can you say? Astrology is so fundamental to any kind of study, as far as I'm concerned. It's so fundamental. It's a real study. We're looking at the planets and the stars. As I say, matter follows magnetism. That's it. If you want to see what's going on Earth, look above and look at the planets and watch the correspondence between the two. And any wise person is going to do this because it's just so obvious and simple. That's the bit that most I find flabbergasting these days, that people don't use astrology. It's mind-numbing for me.
Well, I think the other thing is prospective mums who go into a maternity ward or where they have a baby, there has to be somebody there as a timekeeper who actually then clicks a, says, OK, 27 minutes and 30 seconds past 3 in the morning or something like that, so that there's a real good clear time so that that can help them. I think this is a big one. And the husband has to be able to be on it as well, because the mother and the father, if they really care about their child, they at least will go and get that exact time, yes?
That'd be great, yes. The exact time is good. The value of knowing who your baby is before it's even spoken is tremendous. And then as they grow, you can see who they are and how they're going to function, and if they've got difficulty, you can predict the difficulty times. So the use of astrology in social services is massive, the benefits that it can bring. And what you find is all through the social welfare system, there are these psychologists and social workers who use astrology because they find it so beneficial. But of course, they've got to keep it quiet.
Yes.
And undercover. But it's there. And if I was in charge of anything, astrology would be central to all the social services, because these people are having trouble. They're in difficulty. And so how do we work out what are their issues, and then how do we time them? You know when they're going to be a problem. Yeah, so it's just so valuable for a society and its health and organisation. But, you know, our society is 1,000 years behind, really.
Yes, well, Nikola Tesla said that when humankind starts to research the invisible, they will evolve far faster in one decade than all of our previous history combined.
Well, this is what I said earlier on. The biggest shift in human consciousness that I see is easily possible now is for our culture in particular to get it about astrology, and for everybody to do it for themselves. And as I say, there's only 9 planets. It's pretty simple, and they need to do it for themselves. And with social media and stuff, we could have 1 million people doing this in a month.
Well, this is right. And if Facebook were actually wanting to help the human race and share everything appropriately instead of putting it away into little eddies and cul-de-sacs, we'd be able to solve a whole lot of the challenges facing the whole human race. And, Glenn, we're just going out of time now.
Yeah.
And the pity of it all, I want to know, how do planets have their characteristics embedded in that particular planet's effects? Like Venus has love and beauty and harmony and softness, whereas Mars has got the other, and Jupiter has got expansion and joy, and Saturn has got contraction and a more morose type of personality. It's a very profound subject, astrology. I'm too busy now. I haven't got time for it, but this is the world we're in. But I want to be able to say thank you very much for coming. And what's there, 20 words you want to say before you let out, before you leave?
Well, I think the message is astrology is a fact of physics, and I would love someone to prove that wrong, really. And once we get it, that it's a fact of physics, that it has to be work, there's no way that it cannot work, then get on with it. We can get on with using it and using it for people's benefit.
Exactly, yeah. Well, you see, full moons and lunatics. Very simple. Very simple. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Glenn, thank you very much, Glenn. We're embedding something in here for future generations, trusting.
Excellent. Thank you, Tim, for the opportunity.
Okay. Catch ya.
Thanks.
That was Glenn Atkinson from GarudaBD.org. garudabd.org. Decide to network. Use every letter you write, every conversation you have, every meeting you attend, every email you send. And remember, even Facebook. To tweet and to express your fundamental beliefs and dreams. Affirm to others the vision of the world you want. Network through thought. Network through action. Network through love. Network through the spirit. You are the center of a network. You are the center of the world. You are a free, immensely powerful source of life and goodness. Affirm it, spread it, radiate it. Think day and night about it, and you will see a miracle happen. The greatness of your own life in a world of big powers, media and monopolies. But of 7.7 billion individuals, networking is the new freedom, the new democracy, a new transparency, and a new form of wholeness and happiness. This originated by Dr. Robert Muller, Chancellor of the World Peace University in Costa Rica, Central America. I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com, where we have over 500 interviews in our database, which you can readily download and listen to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world and become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM and ourplanet.org. Please come and love us. This is Tim Lynch
and Lisa Eyre.
In the spirit of Aroha, wishing you a wonderful week. We look forward to being with you next week. I say kia kaha and haere rā.